I'm Dr. Leif Tapanilla from the Idaho Museum of Natural History, and I'm here with Peter Pruitt from Zoo Idaho, and this is The Nature of Idaho. Coming to you from the 1B, Bannock County that is, we're talking all about Idaho, its wild places and wild faces, the natural setting that makes Idaho an incredible place to live and be proud of. Our guest today is Mike Sattell. He's Executive Director of the Watershed Guardians, a nonprofit based here in Pocatello. His group is monitoring beaver habitats in Idaho, and this is going to be a lot of fun, Peter.
It totally is. And I always am reminded when I have moved around the United States that not every area is created equal. You know, as a kid on our farm, we had a creek. We had two beaver dams on our creek. Those were the two best spots to swim because, of course, it was the deepest.
Well, so my favorite beaver story is I was out Canadian, right? So I was out on a lake in Ontario at night in a canoe, and everything was really dark. And all of a sudden, we were getting beaver slaps. But I didn't know about beaver slaps. And they were just slapping the water because I guess we were getting too close. And all night, we were getting slapped by beavers around us. And it sounded like there must have been 20 out of there. And I'm sure there was only one.
One or two, right.
It was freaking me out pretty good.
Oh, yeah. They're wonderful animals. In Minnesota, they might actually be the official mascot. They're everywhere.
We're proud of them in Canada. And here in Idaho, we have a long history of beaver. And they're still here. And we've got people taking care to make sure that they're here for a long time to come. We'll get to that. But you know what? First, nature news.
Nature news, Leif. You know, nitrogen is a natural component in our atmosphere, soil, and in environment. It's extremely beneficial. But as always, if you get too much, not so good. Nitrogen can leach into our waterways. It combines with oxygen to form nitrous oxide, which is a major greenhouse gas. And then it can form with hydrogen and make ammonia, which is an air pollutant. Agriculture is one of the largest producers of nitrogen. And it's just not because of the fertilizers and the chemicals that these agriculturalists use. It's livestock. And nitrogen can be found in urine.
Right. So?
And cows can produce approximately 30 liters of urine a day.
30 liters.
And for those who are still stuck in the gallon category, that's 8 gallons of urine per day.
That's a lot of fluid.
That's a lot of fluid. And there's nitrogen in that urine.
Of course.
There's approximately 1 billion cattle across the world.
1 billion cattle. So, you're doing the math here.
Yep.
Okay, that's, how many gallons a day?
That's 30 billion liters of urine per day. That's a lot of pee.
Okay.
And that nitrogen is not only getting into the soil, it's leaching into the waterways, it's aerosolized. And we do have major issues with pollutants because of cow urine. Now, how can a person reduce the amount of cow urine in our natural environment?
Does it involve singing to cows?
Close.
Really? I was just guessing.
It involves molasses and cows. But if you're Lindsay Matthews from the University of Auckland, you decide to train cows to use the toilet.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So he and his colleagues were able to train 11 of 16 calves to use the moo loo because you just can't call it the cow toilet.
No.
It's the moo loo.
The moo loo.
Yes. And he was able to train these 11 calves in 10 days. As a zookeeper, and I've spent a lot of time training animals, it's 100% possible, and it was fantastic what they did. They basically had this big chute-type area where a cow would go into, and if they urinated in that chute area, which collected the urine, then they got a nice big bit of molasses, you know, a sweet
that
treat.
That was their treat.
It's a great start. The question is, how do you train, for instance, the cattle in Idaho who are free ranging on thousands of acres to run over to the moo loo outhouse?
Yeah, I see some logistical problems there.
Right, right.
Wow. And okay, so by concentrating it, by collecting it in the moo loo, then it's not just getting shed onto the ground.
Right, right.
Water.
When you're looking at 30 liters per day, you know, if you can collect, especially some of these feedlots where you have a high concentration of cattle, if you can start collecting that urine, it does help. You know, you've contained a potential pollutant.
Every wee bit helps?
Every wee bit helps.
You're welcome, Peter.
You're not kidding.
Oh, trivia time for today. What year did Idaho start dropping beavers from parachutes? Oh, you got to hear this story. When we come back, we're talking beaver with Mike Sattell and Watershed Guardians. Stay tuned.
Get continued access to local news and all the programs you enjoy through the Listen Live link at KISU.org. Or try using your web-connected Amazon or Google smart speaker with the command Play KISU.
Hey, welcome back from the break. I want to welcome today's guest, Mike Sattell. He's Executive Director of the Watershed Guardians. They're a nonprofit based here in Pocatello that monitors habitat for beaver. Mike, you oversee Watershed Guardians. Tell me what that organization does and why you fit with that organization.
If I may, I would just start with, I guess you call our origination story or my origination story. And I had done some work with beaver in Colorado. I worked with Sierra Club in Boulder, and we had done some stuff back in the 90s. That passed, and then I was kind of out of the loop for a while. And then a few years ago, I went on a backpacking trip with a very good friend of mine from Nampa. We went up to a place called Dry Creek up in central Idaho. And he was excited for me to go along with him because he knew that there were beaver on that creek, or he supposedly knew. And I had been walking along the trail for a couple of miles, and I started looking around. I go, there's no beaver on this trail. And he goes, oh, I'll bet you a dollar before we're done with this two-day trip, we'll see some beaver activity. Well, we hiked up to the top of Swagger Lakes or Swager Lakes, and we got up there, just beautiful, had a great day fishing and everything, came all the way back on the other side, no beaver. And I wasn't really focusing on it that much, but I was looking at the old cuts. You know, you could kind of see where old trees had been chewed and stuff like that. And there was water in the creek, but definitely no beaver. And we got back, we're driving back on the way home, and just kind of out of nowhere, he pulled a dollar out of his wallet and handed it to me. And I took the dollar, but it was one of those bittersweet things. Plus, I wanted to get a beer down in the and how. But it was really a bittersweet thing for me. And at that time, I decided that I was going to tell 100 people about beaver. That was my original mission. And in the interim, applied for funding, got the opportunity to live up at the guard station on Mink Creek for a while. I knew they were there, did my master's thesis on the water quality impact of beaver, primarily looking at ponds in series, when you can disperse or change the flow regime of any kind of a flowing water system, you get advective mixing, which causes a whole bunch of unique things to happen, including, incidentally, being able to mediate nitrogen or biotransform or convert nitrogen into harmless nitrogen gas. So complete that cycle. And that was my master's thesis. And at that time, we went up to Mink Creek, I went up there with my thesis advisors here in the College of Engineering, and just beautiful ponds. I mean, you talk about a kayaking situation. You could have gone to the cattleman's cabin above the Nordic Center in a kayak and literally kayaked all the way down that creek, all the way down to the cattle guard. Only thing you'd have to do is you'd have to just hop over the dams, you know, with a 3-foot drop. 4 years later, this would have been about 2011, somewhere in there, gone. And, you know, I asked around. I talked to people who were responsible for it, you know, where'd they go? And it's like, we don't know. So I started digging into it a little bit. And at that time, like I said, I was living up there, so I had the opportunity to pay a lot of attention to it. I did. Applied for a grant from Audubon Society. Short story long, I got enough to start with the idea of let's just get the people in the watershed that live here, let them help me find the answer to that question. And frankly, the response was amazing. And so that's counting beaver colonies in the wintertime has been our keystone or our cornerstone event that we do. Our organization is based off of counting those beaver ponds. And those are what I call habitat units. So a lot of people think they're going to see beaver. You might get actually out there and see beaver, or that we count beaver, which is dicey for a couple different reasons. But we're mostly looking at the habitat units, so the dam and the pond. the dam and the pond, the dam and the pond. So we've recorded that now. This year coming up in late January will be our 10th year. And as far as we know, we are the longest sustained beaver census anywhere in the world. So we're pretty proud of that, and props to all the people that helped us out.
You know, let's talk a little bit about how they impact the habitat. We all know about the beaver dams, and you can read some of the famous articles about wolves being reintroduced into Yellowstone, and, you know, the beaver were able to come back, and how they can change not only a river, but a lake and a pond. What are the impacts of beaver within our habitat?
Okay, so first of all, there's going to be three major impacts. You're going to have hydrological, you're going to have what I call short-term biological, and then you're going to have land transformation, which is kind of a mix of both of those things. From a hydrological standpoint, one of the first things they do is they add mass to the stream channel. And they do that by excavating rocks and nearby lumber material, and I use that term loosely. There was somebody in Wyoming back in the 80s that was actually using tires for their lumber. And they, with very little intervention, built a series of dams that have lasted for quite a while. So anyway, they, by creating that mass, they slow the water down. When they slow the water down, it gives it a little bit more time and a little bit more space in the floodplain to infiltrate into the water table. Once it infiltrates in, you have stuff occurring at below water, at the water level, and above the water. Above the water level, you have tree growth, which anchors the banks, keeps that more stable. Below the water level, you get that necessary biological transition where creatures live. Lots of stuff going on. And then below the water level, you got two things that are really important. One is that you're actually recharging the channel, which is the most likely place for water to infiltrate into any valley floors, the stream channel. And then there's also temperature gradation. Once you get below or above 3.5 feet, you start to get temperature striation. Once you get that, that's the miracle. And that's when you start seeing your Mondo cutthroat trout. You get a stable situation in the wintertime where they have a winter refuge. Regular stream, you know, field and stream type picture, not so useful in the West because those creatures have to have somewhere to survive over the winter. And that's what beaver ponds do from that. And then from there, you got a whole host of other things going on.
I'm just curious of how long it takes for a beaver population to establish those kinds of changes in their habitat.
You know, that's a really good question, Leif. Nobody has really looked at it that seriously, and that's, I think, we're trying to fill that niche. The reason for that is, you know, doing a sustained count, having a sustained, measurable population measurement that you've done the same each way for the last 9 years to be able to say, hey, look, this is not doing this anymore. You know, maybe we know from game records that so many beaver have been taken out of this area officially. So we could probably make some estimates of that if we have a continuous recording of what the habitat looked like. So that's another key point. You have to be able to measure that. But I would say to see any sort of permanent change in, let's say, all three of those previous characteristics, hydrology, biology, and channel interaction, I would say minimum 5 years.
Right. So what does your group do to monitor? What's the approach that you guys take?
Okay. So we look at, technical term for it is spore, and it's biological evidence. That's all spore is, a fancy word for biological evidence. So we're looking at particular aspects of the trees that they cut. So we age the cuts, and we're pretty good at aging any cut between 6 weeks and 6 months. We know that. Hmm. Just by looking at the color, the detail on the chips. So we train people to look for that stuff, then they record it on a log sheet.
Kind of looks like if anyone's familiar with ethograms and you're doing kind of like animal behavior type studies, that's basically what it looks like.
Right.
And so on there we have, I think, fresh cuts, new dams, old dams, new lodges, old lodges, mounds, scent mounds, tracks. Tracks are super important for us, and it's one of the main reasons that we do our census in the winter. Because if it snows the day before and you look in a track on top of fresh snow, that's a high quality indicator. And you can get a lot of information. You can pretty well estimate the size of the animal by the track. And so we love doing that. And then, of course, each one of those indicators have a value. And we're working on right now trying to get to the point where if we pool all those factors together, we can say we're 90% confident there's 1 to 2 beaver within a quarter mile of this spot. And so that's where we're heading. But beyond that, I mean, we really want people to understand the notion of a watershed. We always do a lot of education with regard to that.
As you've been doing this, have you seen any trends in the last 4 or 5 years?
Yeah, interestingly enough, we started in 2011, so we don't have really good information prior to that. But in that time period, we saw probably a doubling of population in the main stem up to about 2017. And then in 2017, we started seeing a large decrease in all of our basins. We lost populations in West Fork and East Fork, Jackson Creek, Pebble Creek saw a huge decrease, as did recently Topaz Creek. And those are all the ones we look at. We were doing Dempsey Creek, and like I mentioned before, Jackson Creek. And those populations have basically been extirpated for different reasons, but we were able to document those. So we're at a state right now where I'm going to say basin-wide, if we look at Mink Creek Basin, I would say basin-wide, we are probably about 1/3 population total of where we were in 2017, which is 18, 19, 20, 21. So 4 years, we're down to about 1/3. Now, again, we're not looking necessarily at population. These are just our habitat indices. But we think that our habitat indices are pretty darn good. Once we take those factors and kind of plug them in, and I've got a friend of mine up at ISU who's helping me with crunching some of that data, we're going to just see if we can grind it up a little bit and see if there's a little more finesse that we can see out of that. One interesting thing that we have seen, and it kind of highlights this notion about how do beaver reproduce? What do they do when they're stressed? All these sorts of things. As we've seen a population decrease in one segment and then pop up again in another. That has been going on pretty much off and on, except for the last 3 years. And we're seeing some of those areas that have been depopulated stay depopulated. And I think there's a number of different reasons for that, but we have seen that. That's probably one of our more notable trends. And again, once we get some geographical separation on that information, we can see what's up. Are they dying off? Are they getting taken out? Are they going over the basin? You know, we're trying to get a handle on that.
I'm wondering what some of the economic and resource impacts a healthy population of beaver have on an environment, on a landscape.
I just got a copy of a more recent analysis of that very thing. Prior to that, a private consulting firm called Econ Northwest out of Portland did some work for the Grand Canyon Trust and looked at economic from tourism. They looked at dissolved oxygen production. They looked at water quality on nitrogen in the streams, which beaver have basically validated my theory about passive flow regime changes and what that detention time means, which is in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. It's expensive. I mean, go look at that wastewater treatment plant outside of Pocatello. There's 2 or 3 fans as big as this whole office bare area, and all they're doing is pumping air in that to get rid of the nitrogen. So we're talking not kilowatts, but megawatts. So there's that. Storing water up gradient means your pumping costs are less. So even down in the Mink Creek Irrigation District, if they just let their pump intake water level rise a foot, that saves them something like $600 or $700 a year, just 1 foot. So the economics of moving water add up really fast. And I think that's the other thing that beaver do is they kind of, as much as we can keep it up there, there's a value to that. But anyway, this newest study, I haven't had a chance to read it. I was flipping through it, and what was hundreds of thousands of dollars 10 years ago is up in the millions of dollars now. And so these animals, by virtue of their existence, do all this stuff that this community, this state, this nation, this region need right now. It couldn't be more important. And so that's my thing to try to get across is don't be fooled by somebody coming in with like, we have a beaver-like solution. if it's a beaver thing, you know, it's like, well, I have a beaver stuffed animal, you know, what am I going to do? Stick that in the creek, you know? Beaver are the ones that have been doing this for hundreds of thousands of years. And like we were talking earlier about training cows to get molasses, I'm sure we can figure out how to get beaver to do the stuff where we want to do. And that's going to take everyone's cooperation. That's what we're trying to do.
Well, so a common issue that always seems to come up is where nature and the natural system runs into the wants and needs of an urban population, right? And so I think back to where I grew up in sort of a flatter landscape. I didn't grow up in the mountains. Beaver were either loved or hated because their dams would cause flooding in certain areas, right? And so there's sort of a famous example out in the McCall region a while ago in the last century when some problematic beavers were airlifted out of McCall and parachuted into central Idaho as a solution, right?
Right.
We have people living with beavers, and the beavers are doing something we don't want them to do, so let's relocate them to central Idaho mountains or something like that. And so there were parachuted beavers. We'll get to the trivia answer later. But what are some other approaches then? If you're not going to just pick them up and strap on a parachute, what else can we do to coexist with beaver and I guess keep everybody happy, so to speak, within that?
Well, I think there's regarding that, there's a lot of people very interested in making sure that there's some way to coexist with beaver today. And I think there was back then, too. Obviously, they wanted to get them out and intact. So rather than relocating them where it is right now, where we're at the stage in the game right now where so much of the water in Idaho and the West has been appropriated, it's more and more of a challenge to try to accommodate a wild animal with whatever's going on. I don't care what kind of wild animal it is. And, of course, the impetus for doing that is pretty well ingrained in the state. But that being said, there have been some very ingenious and very effective means to non-lethally cope with beaver conflicts. And that's another thing that we do and we have done in the past is construct these what are called flow devices. And the reason the flow devices are so important is if you imagine looking at a map anywhere in Idaho and you've got a blue line that comes right down the middle of that map, 9 times out of 10, before you move a quarter of an inch on that blue line, you're going to see a red line going right across it. Now, that's an intersection point for those of you studying early math. Two lines intersect to make a point. Traditional response to a conflict at that point, which would be a plug culvert, was to clean out all the beaver upstream of that point and all the beaver downstream by that point. And clean out is a euphemism. They don't use a toilet brush or anything. They use something more like a 270 Winchester.
Not a shop broom?
Okay. A big one.
Okay.
Gotcha. A big one. Interestingly, that's one of the solutions is a giant tube. So this tube goes across the dam, and not only does it keep the beaver from flooding that particular spot, but you can adjust that tube up and down the face of the dam as needed, depending on what your water concerns are. And you're not wiping out his house upstream and his cousin's house downstream. So you're keeping all the benefit, all the good that happens there. We did that on Dempsey Creek, and we did that on Rapid Creek. And up until a few years ago, the one in Rapid Creek had been working perfectly. And some of the people who have been here for a while remember that steady flooding of road up there on Rapid Creek. Well, when it went away, it was us, Watershed Guardians, and some of our helpers that did that and paid for that pipe and got it installed. So we have that experience and success. In fact, I think we were the first one of those in Idaho. And then we have on Dempsey Creek, which is very easy for anybody to get. And you go up Deer Creek Road about a quarter of a mile, and you'll see a cement bridge going across the creek right there. And you'll look at what we have, what's called a beaver deceiver. And it's been working in very, very high water conditions and up until recently with beaver mischief going on successfully for about 6 years. So the beaver can do what they want to do upstream, they can do what they want to do downstream, and we've just fixed that very specific solution.
As we move forward, what can the people of Pocatello and our region do to help out the Watershed Guardians?
We have all kinds of venues, all kinds of opportunities for people to help out. Obviously, our main goal is to keep track of the beaver that we have. So no matter what any potential solution is, by far and away, all of my colleagues and all the experts agree that the best thing is to keep them where they're at. Don't relocate them. Don't try to machine your way out of it, I guess, or construct your way out of it. Just leave them where they are. Let them do what they can. So having a community whose eyes and ears are in the watershed, and again, that's what we want to do, get out there. Don't tear it up, but explore it and find out what it's all about. And when you see something, let us know or participate in the beaver count, and you can go out and see where they are. And then throughout the year, just kind of keep an eye. And if there's somebody out there with a high-powered rifle up at one of the pullouts and they're shooting down at the water, they're not shooting at carp. You know, so that's the type of things we want. We want the community to be vigilant about their watershed. That's yours, mine, everybody's watershed up there, and we need those beaver up there for that. The other thing is talk to people. Find out the information. Visit our webpage. If you want to get on our list, you go to watershedguardians.org. Learn a little bit about it, and if you're in a conversation, you know, about somebody, oh, you know, I had my neighbor, you know, shot the beaver out of the deal, you know, why? Talk to him about it, you know, and say, well, they're actually pretty good, you know, you may want to, and there's ways to work around it. And we've done some workshops on Mink Creek working with private landowners, but find out and then share your story. We love hearing people's stories, and believe me, there's tons and tons of different stories out there. And then, of course, like I said, go to our webpage, and we have lots of opportunities where people can support us. We're on Facebook. We just have hiking events, you know, get involved with that. And like I said, be informed and know your watershed.
And the cool thing is beaver are extremely busy. So if you find an area where they're at and you go back on a weekly basis or a monthly basis, you're going to see different things. So, you know, binge watch beaver working versus Netflix, right?
It's very entertaining. It's very entertaining. I had a lawn chair set up in my secret spot up there at the guard station. And I would just go, you know, hang out my lawn chair about dusk, you know, and just watch them go to town. And it was, after a while, they kind of get used to you. But then somebody stole my lawn chair.
It ended up in the dam, did it?
I'm not. It could have. I've seen some strange things put in a beaver dam, let me tell you.
I started off the show with some trivia and alluded to it just recently about parachuting beaver. Believe it or not, if you haven't heard this story, McCall had a beaver problem at a certain point, and to relocate these beaver, some World War II parachutes were used to fly out and parachute beaver out into central Idaho. Can you tell us when we started doing that in Idaho?
Well, it started in 1948, and I think it continued for a year or another half a year after that.
It's a remarkable thought, just imagining beaver in boxes. These were in like wooden crates, and they had a triggering mechanism, so when it would land after the parachute landed the box to the ground, the box would spring open, and out would come a mysterious beaver into a mysterious land or something.
I'm just thinking, maybe confused. What happens if the parachute covers the box and the beaver pokes his head out and can't see anything except a silk parachute?
You know, we have a special department about beaver psychology, and we're looking for somebody to lead that department, Peter.
I got it.
Yeah. You got it. You're set.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. I can train him to urinate in a special beaver outhouse,
well,
too.
Man, you have skills.
I got mad skills. All right. We really want to thank Mike Sattell today for joining us. And really, if you want to learn more about Southeast Idaho's beaver population and our watersheds, please go to watershedguardians.org.
The Nature of Idaho is recorded at the studios of KISU in Pocatello. Production is by Jamin Anderson with assistance from Shelby McGovern. Send feedback to NOIDKISU. The Nature of Idaho weekly episodes can be found at KISU.org or wherever you get your podcasts.